Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Technology Leaders.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Technology Leaders brought to you by our good friends at Band of Coders. Stone, how you doing?
I am doing well. We made quite the rounds today before the afternoon show. We went to Alon's.
Yes, espresso.
And the chicken gumbo, I thought was great.
That was a new addition to the day.
Right. Then we came back. We did the conference call talking about the remote broadcast stuff that's coming up. And then we shout out to Henri's and Crystal.
For more espresso.
I know.
We were able to fit in espresso twice.
So in answer to your question, I'm absolutely wired. I'm jazzed. I'm excited about this segment. And so thankful that the good folks over at Band of Coders have made this possible for us. So this is going to be a lot of fun. A little bit later in the segment, we're going to have back on the Business Radio X microphone, and this is going to be a real treat. Chief Executive Officer.
Experience.
Chief Experience Officer. I said CXO. I took a leap. I know I didn't read the big long thing. But we have Lee Fairball back with us. She's with Point Clear Solutions, as many of you will remember. And I think maybe the last time we visited with her. Weren't we on like the rooftop of the Metro Atlanta Chamber? That was a cool event. So we'll get caught up on what you've been doing since then. We also have with us campus director with the Iron Yard Code School, Sarah Lodato. But first up on Atlanta Technology Leaders this afternoon, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce the vice president with One Ring Networks, Mr. Chris Marr. How you doing, man?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Well, we are delighted to have you. Why not two rings, man? Tell us a little bit about this name and what you guys are up to.
Gosh, the name was developed by a couple of the previous owners back in 2004, 2005.
Is Beyonce one of them?
Exactly. So we kind of adopted the One Ring Networks from the company we purchased, One Ring Group, back in 2004 and 2005.
And so what are you guys doing for folks?
So we are what's known as an alternative access provider. So we provide business internet service both via fixed wireless and fiber.
And I don't know what fixed wireless is. I think I understand what wireless is, but what does that mean, fixed wireless?
So fixed wireless is a little different than cellular in that it's installed on a building rooftop or tower, and it's microwave direct point-to-point from one of our points of presence to another. So currently in Metro Atlanta and North Georgia, we have about 150 POPs or lit buildings that we then service customers from.
So now you put these devices on buildings, and then you have a certain amount of coverage? Is that how it works?
Absolutely. So we have a coverage area of roughly 2 miles from every building that we install. Mm-hmm. And then we also offer the tenants within those building services.
So now that's the value to say that we're in a big office building right now. If this office building could be wireless if it chose to by putting this device on the roof.
So what we would do is we would put a device on the roof and we would deliver services via the wire into the telephone closet. We're an alternative to the AT&Ts that you have.
So who is it, typically office buildings or is it hotels? Like, who's your typical customer?
So we have a handful of verticals. Hotels are a large vertical for us. They have conferences and need huge bandwidth. We also do a lot with healthcare and with the entertainment industry.
When you're saying entertainment, is that like if a film is being broadcast somewhere that they can hire your company, and that way they have stable Wi-Fi and they're not just relying on whatever their smartphone's picking up?
Sure. So basically, in Georgia now, there's about 150 movies being produced at any time during the year. Most of them need high bandwidth to upload their dailies to Los Angeles or wherever the production house is. And we provide that service that they traditionally could only get in, 12 or 24-month terms. We give them short-term, high bandwidth.
So interesting decision that you guys just all got together over a couple of beers and said, let's just go head-to-head right after AT&T. I mean, did that not give you a little bit of pause at first to just go after that kind of market?
Yeah, actually, we started it as it was a little bit of a different format. We were going to offer bandwidth to multiple dwelling units.
And so like apartments or condos?
Exactly. We thought that they were underserved. We wanted to sell to the individual residential customer manage the campus Wi-Fi.
Right.
And then, you know, provide their internet and voice services.
So that's how it started. So that was the first bright idea?
Exactly.
So what happened? You were knocking on their doors, and what happened?
You know, we got a couple of them on board, and we realized that individual residential users are a customer service nightmare. And we then got a few calls from companies looking for diversity and redundancy. And then we had property managers calling us when businesses were moving into a new space and they didn't have their internet services set up or didn't expect it to take so long. So, you know, one of our huge benefits on that arena is that we can connect someone very quickly within days rather than weeks or months.
And then so the apartment complex wasn't good because the apartment complex doesn't care if the end user has internet or not, right?
Exactly.
But in a hotel, that's a nice to have, and then that's that way you have one customer, the owner of the hotel.
Exactly.
As opposed to 300 customers.
That's exactly right. So, you know, we're also a benefit to the hotels because they're trying to attract conferences, and these conferences have riders now that require them to have 100 or 300 or a gig, and the hotels don't want to carry that on 12-month terms or 24-month terms. So we'll go in, install it for, you know, a week or a couple days, you know, while that event
is going on.
It's like what we were talking about, the conference call I was telling you about at the top of the show. It was about a remote broadcast that we're doing in D.C., you know, where we do all this, but we do it in a trade show booth. Well, one of the topics that came up was the internet service. Now, it may very well be that this particular venue has something year round, but it's also entirely possible they've contracted with like you guys, and you guys have said, great, we'll swing in there while you're doing this event for a week, and we'll give you a high quality, reliable service. And I don't know, you can even set them up to turn around and rent it to us too. Is that like, would you rent it to them, and then they would turn around and like,
and they resell it?
Like,
is that what they?
Yeah,
that's how it typically works.
That's exactly how it works. So we do a lot of stuff with the World Congress Center, the Tabernacle, pretty much anywhere that has, you know, events. You know,
so this way they don't have to pay when they're not having an event. They only
correct.
Pay. They turn it on when they need it and turn it off when they don't need it.
That's exactly right.
How big is this device?
Well, the devices get as big as 6 feet on some towers, depending on how far you're shooting. But typically, they're about the size of a notebook.
Really?
Yep.
So and we have them like in your trunk and you just run over there and just throw it up on the roof?
Exactly. Exactly. No, we have a handful of service trucks that are ready to roll and install. This week's been particularly busy for us. We've been, you know, preparing for the Shaky Knees Music Fest, and we're doing a couple other events right now for a gaming company that's having about 1,000 gamers online.
Yeah, so they use a ton of bandwidth.
Exactly, that's over at Center Stage.
Mm-hmm.
So you need a lot more bandwidth for a little bit of time. This is, it sounds like a good alternative. What about hospitals and schools? Do they have this kind of peak demand as well, or is the value there just providing them with something more systematic, reliable over time at a much better price? Or what's the value proposition there?
So the value prop for schools is that, you know, as they're migrating from books to tablets and online cloud content, their bandwidth needs have essentially doubled and tripled almost every year. So having our solution there allows us to get a call from them when they're ready to upgrade, and we can upgrade on the fly typically to the next level of service. So they tend to keep us on multi-year terms. We've had Cobb County Schools now with us for years now, and they just upgraded to a 4-gig circuit.
All right, so is all of this is wireless, or do you lay some fiber as well? Or?
We do fiber as well.
You do fiber as well.
Exactly.
So you're equipment agnostic. It's the service that you want to provide and the reliability and the flexibility. I mean, that's a hallmark of what you guys are, at least that's in your marketing. I'm assuming you're really living this, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So we, like you said, we are agnostic as far as the delivery method. We're just trying to put together a solution that's going to work best for each individual customer.
So now, like when a film comes to town, how do they know to call you? Is their first call like typically to a Comcast or AT&T? Is that what they normally do?
You know, a lot of times it is. And then they hear that it's going to take 3 to 6 months to get a circuit installed.
Right.
And they typically call last minute. So
So they'll be like, you know, we'll be here
Friday.
Really? End of week. And you're like, I'll just send a truck and then I can get you guys going.
Absolutely. So
how much lead time do you need?
You know, we can do turnups in as quickly as 24 hours.
Right. So, if you have the trucks available.
Exactly. Exactly. So we typically will get a call. It's a really small world in the movie industry here. Right. It seems like the producers go from movie to movie to set to set.
Yeah, it's the same guy, right? He was working on one film 6 months ago, and now he's back.
Exactly.
And it's good for him to have you in his network, so he knows at the last minute.
Absolutely. So we tend to go from movie to different set to different set. And what's happening now is they usually take an unused warehouse, they convert it into a set or a production.
Right.
And then when they leave, a new movie comes in there. So a lot of times we're already sitting there, you know, with our equipment.
You know where to put everything.
Exactly.
Yep. So it seems like it makes absolute sense for a certain level of business. Is there some particularly a size of business where this is a very practical alternative, but below that they might as well just kind of stick with what they're doing? Or
now that businesses at a minimum are typically using at least a T1, that we would service those types of businesses every day.
And so even if I've just got just kind of a small, medium-sized business, but if I own the building or I have access to the building or something, then this is something worth looking into, right?
Yep, absolutely. We provide services from, $100 a month to tens of thousands a month.
All right, so there's actually like as little as $100 a month you can do some stuff. All right, so
you can go to my house?
Right. Yeah.
We don't do residential.
Right. No residential.
See, I'm the Christmas house, and I have a whole bunch of folks to send on me in December. Would you think you might make an exception? And some of them do have jobs.
Yep.
So, I mean, we should talk afterwards.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can't you just swing one of those notebooks on my roof?
Right. Yeah. It doesn't sound like it's that big a deal. But you don't want to make it sound too easy, or people won't want to write the check.
That's exactly right. There's a lot of trees in Atlanta, so you got
to... It's the tree. Is that the problem?
Yeah, you have to avoid hills and trees.
Hills and trees. So I like what I'm hearing, and you and I, we've had a bit of a conversation, and I'll take two, right? Because we've talked, we've gotten to know each other a little bit, but how does your sales and marketing thing work day to day? Do you got people knocking on your door? Are you sending salespeople out? Talk to us, how's the sales and marketing side of what you do? How's that work?
Sure. We have three facets to our sales. One is, direct. We're trying to go out, knock on doors, find new areas where we have large amounts of bandwidth. We're also trying to make the phones ring. We do a lot of web ads and SEO style.
So you have like white papers and things like that?
Absolutely.
To like start conversations?
Absolutely.
And you target certain verticals?
We do.
And what are they?
We target the healthcare.
So healthcare being a medical office?
Medical offices,
hospitals,
multi-location doctor's offices, the whole realm there.
That way they control, is there a security element to that when they control the network like that?
Absolutely. They can.
Is that the selling point to them?
It is, and they're sending large files now, medical imaging, e-scripts, that type of information that needs to be protected, secure, but they're large files.
And then is there a HIPAA compliance that you have to deal with in that world?
Yep, there is. Absolutely.
And then so you already have the learning curve on that.
Yep, we're pretty well versed.
That sounds like a fun business. So what's next and what do you need and how can we help? You need more customers? You need more people out there just knowing about this thing?
Yeah, I think our biggest challenge is, everybody knows AT&T and there's never been an IT guy fired because he chose AT&T, right? So, our marketing budget is much smaller than theirs. And, we gain most of our businesses by word of mouth, referral, and by doing a good job. So,
all right. Well, where can our listeners go to learn more?
You can call us at 404-303-9900, or you can find us on the web at www.oneringnetworks.com.
And that's one spelled out.
Correct.
Well, I have thoroughly enjoyed the conversation on a couple of levels. One is, seriously, every week or so, we're talking to somebody about these remote broadcasts. And, of course, we can broadcast stuff from any event as long as we have a stable internet connection. And we always say, that's on you. And we can do wireless, wired, whatever. I don't know if this is even practical, but maybe after the show or another time we ought to get together, maybe we can throw one of your gizmos in our kit and pay and write you a check every month. I don't know. That might
Does
be
that
worth
work
exploring.
Like that?
It's similar to that. Yeah, we can absolutely talk.
Or maybe we can just say, send your truck to Chattanooga. Mm-hmm. We're going to be in Chattanooga for 3 days doing this thing. What would you charge us to send your check? But to me, it warrants a conversation. But the other reason that I'm just kind of excited and glad you came in the studio, I'm always delighted to hear about technology alternatives from what so many of the rest of us just assume is the only way to do it. I think this is exciting, and I think it would be fun to at least explore the idea of having you come back with maybe a client and have them talk about how they've been working with you guys or partnering with you guys. Would that be fun?
Yeah. Interestingly, we have one here.
Oh, psst. I didn't know that. I didn't do my research.
Man.
You know
we actually just discovered this out.
Oh, this wasn't a planned strategic thing.
Coincidence?
No, so this is total coincidence.
All right. That's about as good a segue as we can possibly manage. Given that.
Now the pressure's on.
Please join me in welcoming to the podcast, again, no stranger to the Business Radio X microphone, Chief Experience Officer with Point Clear Solutions, Miss Lee Faribault. How you doing?
Doing great. How are you?
I'm doing well, but I had no idea that you were a client of these folks.
Yeah, so we moved in, not the office we're in today, but in an office we had in Marietta. Surprise, surprise, there's no internet. And there was one ring. And
you moved in.
You were had to be shocked, right?
Yes.
You go into a place in this like day and age that there's no internet. I mean, how is that even possible?
Yeah, a business park, a building with lots of tenants, and you're thinking, what? There's no wire? What?
How is that even possible in this day and age?
And so we learned a good lesson in signing a lease.
Really? But,
no kidding.
Yep. That's a good.
So one ring helped us out.
That's fantastic. And so far, so good.
Yeah,
reliable
absolutely.
Service, all that
absolutely.
Good stuff.
Great. You know, when I called, great, wonderful people on the other end of the line. So, yeah, good stuff.
Nice. Man, that's how serious.
You're welcome, Chris.
Yeah, you're welcome
thanks,
for that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right.
Thank you.
Talk a little bit about being a chief experience officer.
Yeah, well, it's the title where you can make it whatever you want, right? No one right? really knows what it means. But at Point Clear, we do software development for healthcare. And one of the key components of that is user experience. I think healthcare users are special people, not just doctors and nurses, but consumers of healthcare. And they have special needs, in terms of the types of environments they work in, the life and death kinds of decisions that they're making or dealing with. And so we do a lot of work around understanding who they are, what they need, and designing software solutions to fit what we learn about them.
And how did you get in this line of work? What did you do before this?
So I've always been a designer of sorts, and I was a web developer early in my career, and working on a project where the interface was very difficult for the end user to use. So there I was at 1:30 in the morning, uploading content onto the web, and I thought there's got to be a better way. And I started researching usability, and I learned about Georgia Tech, and I ended up going back getting a master's there and sort of making a career pivot at that point into it's human-computer interaction is the academic term, but essentially into user experience.
So now in healthcare, you're saying that that's a different animal just because it's life and death?
Well, there's a few reasons it's a different animal. So if you think just about a healthcare provider like a doctor or a nurse, you're thinking about someone who's highly educated, very, right. very well trained. And what they want to do is operate, we call it the top of their license. So they don't want to do administrative things. They want to care for patients. They're working in a very intense environment, lots of things going on, lots of beeps and bongs and people yelling at them and, all that good stuff. And then it's a team culture
right.
where it's a care team taking care of a patient. And then you have the patient aspect. It's not one size fits all. You're seeing lots of different things day in, day out. So all those things contribute to the fact that their technology cannot weigh them down, slow them down, frustrate them, annoy them, allow them to make mistakes.
But it doesn't the technology annoy each one of those constituents differently?
Yes, and that's why I have a job.
So now your job is to kind of understand each of the constituents and make their job as seamless and as easy as possible?
Right. Yep. Understand how they work together. We call it workflow in our business.
So what's an example of something you deployed technology-wise?
So we've One of the things we've been working in lately, it's a hot topic in healthcare, is this idea of care management. So you might have a patient who has a chronic disease that they're trying to manage.
Like a chronic disease like diabetes?
Like diabetes, yep, okay. Exactly. So it behooves the people who are paying for their care that they're closely monitored, that they're following certain guidelines, that ultimately we're trying to make them better, we're trying to improve outcomes. Right. So you might have someone who's called a care manager who starts off with this patient and seeks to understand where they are right now and managing their disease. It's called barriers. What are their barriers to managing their disease effectively or getting better, helping them set goals and helping them work towards those goals.
So like a patient that's diabetic, they're supposed to maybe take insulin, maybe they're supposed to exercise, maybe they're supposed to do certain things.
Take their blood glucose,
weigh
themselves.
And be compliant, right?
Exactly.
There's a lot of discipline involved in being, if you do it right? It's a very disciplined lifestyle if you choose to make it that way.
And the person that's the patient, they're not the best at being compliant, right?
Exactly, or they wouldn't be in a situation.
Even though it's their life is depending on them being compliant.
Right.
So intellectually, they know they have to do maybe 8 things a day or whatever. Right. So you create some technology that gently nags them to be compliant?
There might be 2 sides of the application. There's the piece that helps the care manager learn, you know, document about them, learn more about them, and then track their progress.
Right, because the care manager says, weigh yourself once a week.
Right.
And so they check a box and say, I told them, my job is done.
Right. But and you have to get the patient to
actually do that activity. And so there's no way, you know, the doctor may not see them for 3 months now, right?
Right.
And so they're thinking, well, they've done that 12 times. Right. So that'll be done. And I'll check in. But in 90 days, they might have weighed themselves once. And now they weigh 10 pounds more.
Right. So this is a means to keep that from happening, you know, to keep tabs on them. And so the other, to me, the most fascinating part of all this is that, just like you said, people do not behave in rational ways, right? Like, we all know we shouldn't have that bowl of ice cream, but we do it.
It's delicious.
Yeah.
It's not our fault.
Right. I mean, even tonight I was planning to go home and work out, and my neighbor texts me, there's a ladies' night, let's go have wine. Okay.
You know, TV is so good nowadays. Right. It is not my fault. I cannot motivate myself to exercise.
Right. So what we have to do is figure out, okay, how do you get people to do those things, knowing that they don't behave rationally? And it's this whole field called behavioral economics, and how do you understand the true workings of the human brain and design things?
Behavioral economics.
Is it possible to move someone? Because I read a study that said people have had like open heart surgery, and they know that they had their chest ripped open and had to have some procedure. 90% of them go back to the same lifestyle that caused that, like within a year.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that wasn't enough of a wake-up call.
Right.
So you can actually come up with some gizmo on my phone that's going to make me compliant.
I don't know that I'm going to promise all that. But
that's what the goal is, right?
Right. That's exactly what the goal is. And there's ways to optimize and understand, reduce barriers, increase motivation, make things easier for people to do, involve their community. So many times, you know, having someone help you or ask you or be proud of you when you do those kinds of things, huge motivator. I mean, that's why we're all on Facebook going, I ran 15 miles this weekend.
Right.
Because you want someone to go like or great job. Right. You know, so there's ways, definitely.
So when it comes to designing apps for the healthcare arena, where do organizations typically err? Do they make them too complicated and geared too much toward the practitioner, or do they make them dumb them down too much, too simple, and they make them too dumbed down?
Too complicated.
They make them too complicated.
Yeah, too feature rich. And they make it too hard for people to do simple activities. In fact, you know, one of the big trends that we're seeing these days is around wearables. So, for example, a Fitbit, you put it on your wrist, you don't have to do a thing, it counts your steps. You don't have to type in anything. That's the holy grail. You know, something that's sensing your environment or your actions around you and saving you the step of, excuse the pun, of having to actually input something.
Don't you have one of those things or something like it?
I've tried multiple wearables over the years. It's always something will annoy me.
Yeah.
Like I had a Fitbit. Yeah. You're familiar with that. Mm-hmm. It's really small. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you forget to take it off and then it's in the wash. And then all of a sudden it's, you know, $100 useless device.
Right. And so they're iterating on the Fitbit. I had one of the original ones and I would get halfway through the dog walk and be like, where's the Fitbit? It's at home on the dresser.
But I'll tell you, it can negatively motivate you because if you ran 5 miles and it shows 3 miles.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's going to make you
You're
mad
now, right?
Right. Yes.
And so it's not neutral. No. You're angry.
Yes. And especially if you're in competition
right.
with someone
you
else.
You feel like, how am I going to get 2 more miles?
Yes. That element of competition. So we gave Fitbits to my in-laws, and the two of them have just walked their tails off competing with each other.
Well, what are they doing at home watching TV? And they're just shaking it. No. That's what they're doing.
No,
they're not running.
No, they're walking 18 holes on the golf course. I mean, yeah.
All right. So your job, how does it work? Do you have people coming to you and then you consult with them and then you draw out these big whiteboard things and then you go back and make all the wires make that happen?
Kind of.
Yeah, walk us through that a little bit.
Yeah, so typically our customers bring us some sort of, I call it a design problem. I mean, they're trying to solve, maybe they might think of it as a business problem, but they're trying to solve some sort of problem where they need expertise in design for the healthcare industry or design for provider adoption or patient adoption or something like that. And then I call it sort of our user experience toolkit. We have all kinds of different methods that we use to either elicit information from end users, to make informed design decisions and illustrate that in different ways. And so we sort of put together a custom solution that makes sense for them based on the problem they're trying to solve, the time frame they have, the budget they have. Are they starting from scratch, redesigning something?
But you must be really skilled, you and your team, because you're talking to John Q. Public, you're talking to Lee, and you're having him express his frustration with the last gizmo, mm-hmm. and then you're trying to go back to your team and factor in work some of these challenges out of the next iteration, right?
Right. Yeah, it's some art and some science.
Yeah,
and there's certainly a science to the way that you craft the questions, the way you ask them. You don't want to lead them to a certain thing. You want to try to be very neutral. There's a science there, and then the art part is taking all that information that you have, and that's sort of where the magic happens, and formulating it into a solution.
Now, the solution, are you creating hardware, or are you using existing hardware and solving it with software?
We are typically using existing hardware and solving it with software.
So then you have a team of developers, or you're the developer? Or
we have a team of developers, yep.
Is that something you're always looking for, or are you...
Yes.
That's a challenge, right?
Yes. In fact, there's your next segue, because that's what Sarah and I were talking about, is the challenges of finding developers.
Because you can come up with the greatest idea, but you got to throw some bodies on this.
Right. And really, the true secret sauce that we've learned over the years is not to come up with a great idea and throw it at someone, but to work together actively with our development team to make sure that what we're designing is realistic, that they can build it, that they already start thinking, you know, while we're still in the design phase. Makes things go a lot faster. We're seeing so much of a rise in mobile.
Right.
And our design team wants to be able to not only produce static images that we can show to the client, but actually produce working code that we can demonstrate or that can be part of the front end of an application. And so we're always looking for people who have those skills.
So mobile is very rapidly changing the whole face of healthcare IT, right? Because I
Definitely.
Can, among other things, I can go to one doctor and they refer me to another and they put the relevant records and information on my cell phone or something.
Right.
I hand it to the next doctor.
Right. Yep.
All that's happening right in front of our eyes. I got to believe it would be exciting and maybe a little bit challenging in that. So you've got this team of developers. You're going out to the people and you're getting the input and trying to design from that user experience. And then you go to Ernie Engineer, who could design up here at level 9. And what you need is a level 4 design, right? And Ernie Engineer's a little frustrated because he could do so much more if you would just let him. And then you have to navigate all those worlds. I mean, I'm sure it's very exciting, but it's a challenge.
It is. Yes. I mean, that's the joy and the sorrow with really talented developers like we have is that they're so smart, they're so with it, they're into the newest and greatest technology. But sometimes, just like you asked me before, are things too complex or too simple?
Yeah.
They're too complex. And most people need simple, small set of features. You know, that's a win.
Right. Like the flip cam was successful because there was just a red button and you couldn't screw it up.
Right.
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 And that resonated with a lot of people.
Yeah.
Plug it right into your computer.
But I guess the designer or the coder sees a smartphone and is like, this is like a computer.
Right.
Like, you know, this has more computing power than what put a person on the moon.
Right.
So why would you just want it to do one thing?
Right.
So you're always kind of battling that or finding the balance.
Yeah. Or what you're trying to do is compartmentalize. So that phone can do a million things, but maybe you want an app to do one thing really well.
Uh-huh.
So what is the, what would you call it? The market maturity level. Are people banging down your door and you're just trying to pick the right fun projects? Or are you out there scraping for business and hoping to get your next project? Or where are we in the development of the in the cycle, I guess?
Yeah, so when we first started this business back in 2006, I spent a lot of time telling people why they needed user experience, why it was important, trying to convince them, you know, squeezing blood from a turnip. And that has just, you know, it's done a 180. User experience is a hot topic, and healthcare is specifically learning that that's a competitive differentiator. That there's so many apps out there with confusing and difficult user interfaces, and that creating something that's simple, intuitive, easy to use based on good research is a good way to leapfrog their competitors.
Now, is there, I would imagine the data is out there that when you try a new app or a person uses an app, how quickly do they abandon it? Is there any data that says?
Yeah, you know, I don't know off the top of my head, but a lot of people abandon really quickly.
Because you find this, I mean, when you roll something out, you can tell immediately, right?
Sure, yep.
So what do you do? Do you have to iterate around like, oh, everybody's abandoning, we better change something we thought was so in real life isn't so? And
yeah, I mean, one of the things that we try to help our clients do is mitigate that up front. So we do a lot of iterative testing with prototypes, and we do market research, user research.
Where the user's using it. Like,
right.
It's not just you guys in the office are using it. You have some actual people.
Exactly.
Like, if this is meant for 80-year-olds, that's a different experience than when you're a 20-year-old designer is coming up with stuff,
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely, yes. In fact, we've just been recently working on a project that had those exact constraints, and we did quite a bit of research to understand what is the optimal touch target size for an older person. It's not that their fingers are bigger, but that they have a harder time hitting a small target that takes them longer and they miss more. So, you know, we took the iOS and Android guidelines and then we expanded so that our buttons are bigger, our links are bigger, you know, everything is tailored. And that's just, you know, one of the things we do. And then we will actually test this application with real users. We'll run through a number of tests. And so the beautiful thing about users is they always surprise you. They bring you something you had no idea would trip them up.
Really?
But it's so much better to learn that before you're in the App Store.
Right, exactly.
So these educational institutions, the universities, the hospitals, the large businesses that are on the periphery of the healthcare arena, you're out building relationships with these folks and collecting data like we were talking about earlier. And like sharing the beta versions of your stuff, and is there a lot of that kind of exchange of information and like this laboratory environment? Or
you know, there is some of that exists, especially here in town. You know, around Georgia Tech. Typically, though, a lot of times our clients are working on something that they consider top secret.
Proprietary, right?
So you know, we do recruiting and we test users, but we're not necessarily publicizing what we're building. I mean, we work with a lot of startups or with established companies that are doing a Skunkworks or an R&D type project.
I hadn't thought about that. I bet startups, you're probably doing a lot of stuff with them, right?
Yeah.
Aren't they fun?
They are fun.
Well, those folks, they have so much energy and they may not have much money. And sometimes they do have a little money. Sometimes they got a little funding.
Right.
But they always have such passion and drive for what they're doing. We love hanging out with the startup.
Yeah, absolutely.
Creativity and, you know, We work with venture-backed startups. So the ones that...
There you go. So you got some funding and...
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Fantastic. Well, what can Lee do to help you going forward? You mentioned that you always need more... developers, right?
And you know, while business is great, you know, it's always good to hear from more companies that have an application where adoption is critical. I mean, I don't know any that don't.
But it's the healthcare funded startup is your sweet spot.
Those, as well as you know, established vendors in the healthcare space. So a lot of our clients are names you'd recognize that produce a lot of software for healthcare, but particularly might hire us for a certain skill set that we have. We can help them with.
All right. Well, we'll do everything in our power, starting with sharing this conversation with our network. And I know our guest and you will do the same, and we'll do everything we can to get the word out.
Great.
We're big fans of what you guys are doing.
Thank you.
I applaud your efforts, and it has a genuine impact on the quality of life for all of us. So keep up the good work.
All right. Thank you.
And hang out with us for a little while. We're going to visit with one more guest.
Can I share my URL before we do that?
Absolutely.
Absolutely not. I'll have to. No. Of course you can. Absolutely. Please. Where can our folks go to learn more?
They can go to www.pointclearsolutions.com.
All right. Pointclearsolutions.com. Yes, and then they can set up and have a conversation with you guys, mm-hmm. learn more about what you're up to.
Exactly.
All right. Fantastic. Well, this has been fun. I've learned so much in the last 20, 30 minutes.
I know.
You already knew all this.
Look,
stuff.
What can I say?
All right. So we're going to wrap up today's segment.
And we'll see if Sarah knows Chris.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody seems to know everybody. It's like a little networking type deal. Campus director from the Iron Yard. Please welcome Sarah Lodato. Hello there.
Hi.
So what have you learned in the last couple of segments?
Well, I learned that we all kind of need each other, which is kind of weird. maybe we'll be placing some developers with Point Clear.
There you go.
Pretty exciting.
So if you have the capacity to place developers, you mm-hmm. must know a thing or two about developers. Tell us about your world and what you're doing with and for and through developers.
Yeah. So a lot of my job is sort of making community connections because we're both trying to promote developers to be active participants in the community, responsible members of the community, be very active in giving back to the community. But it's also part of our job to give them jobs. So a lot of that is very much tied into building relationships. So that's my job, both for our students, but also for people that are looking for developers in Atlanta, in the community. We started in Greenville, and most of our efforts are in bridging that gap between the employer and somebody that is looking for a career in the technology field. So
you deal with people that are interested in coding?
Yes, from different areas. So some people have some experience with coding and are looking to sort of refine their skills or learn something in a new language. And some of those people are coming from completely different backgrounds that are looking for a career shift, looking for something to bring back to their existing career.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually get people from all walks of life that have various, you know, levels of experience in
technology.
Is
there a personality type that's good at coding?
Well, we are actively seeking awesome people.
Awesome. That's it. They
yep.
take one
don't
of those.
Let him, don't let him stereotype the coder, because I contend that there's not a personality type that would make
really?
For a good coder any more than a good salesperson or a
right.
good chief experience officer. Now, but I mean, that's my contention.
I completely agree. That's kind of our goal, is to
so
break
anybody,
that stereotype.
Really?
Yeah.
How smart do you have to be?
All right. Now, you do. There is probably is an intelligence requirement.
Like, if you're terrible at math, could you be a coder?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So you're like a creative painter.
I think
you could
we
be
all
a coder.
I think we all have capacity for a certain level of logical thinking.
Are you a coder?
I have dabbled. I would definitely not call myself a coder. I'm proficient in the styling languages. I've built websites and stuff like that, but it is not my main main passion.
So where are we on the supply-demand curve these days? Are there there's a shortage of developers with the right credentials, and so is that accurate?
Absolutely, yeah, and that gap is widening. Traditionally, people that are coding are coming from for 2 to 4 year academic settings.
Mm-hmm.
And even in those settings, there's an emphasis on sort of the liberal arts education model, which is wonderful. I did it. I went through that route and I greatly appreciate it.
You're a campus director now.
Yep.
Look at that.
Exactly.
Can't argue with that.
Exactly. but there is a very different way for a lot of people. You know, it's common knowledge that everybody learns differently. So we're trying to sort of make that process more in line with the actual speed of technology so that people can, you know, very rapidly change what they're doing in their own career.
How rapidly?
Something. 3 months.
90 days.
Yep. 12 weeks.
In 12 weeks, you can take me, who doesn't know anything, and I would be skilled enough to work with Lee.
Well, you have to be awesome first.
You have to be awesome.
We have to be
awesome.
I might have failed that right off the bat.
And a work ethic requirement, yeah, I think, it's somewhere ethic. In there.
Two
right?
strikes against me already.
Yes, this is not 3 months sipping cocktails by the pool. we tell our students to expect 60 to 80 hours worth of work a week. It's very intense. We have found excellent success in the full-time immersion model. So we're pretty excited about that. So it's a tough 3 months, but 3 months is an eternity in the technology world. So they're really learning a lot. In addition to learning to code, which is kind of the easy part of our job.
That's the easy part.
Yeah.
What's the hard part?
It's talking to the customer and getting the customer you can use your stuff, right?
Exactly. We're very, very actively teaching our students those soft skills that are required to be
like good listener,
software developer,
understand what the objective is, not just
exactly.
You know, check boxes on the checklist.
Right. And we want to encourage people that might not be used to thinking like a software engineer to think like a software engineer, to think through those problems logically, to focus on the user experience, and think about every piece of the product that they're creating so that they can create a very mindful product for both themselves, the user, and the other people in their team. It's very rare that they're working by themselves. So we want to develop those skills.
Now, are you getting some high school kids that maybe college isn't the right fit for them, that maybe struggled in high school, that this could become an avenue for them to have a successful career?
Absolutely. We're very, very lucky that we're actually getting people from a huge range of backgrounds. We do have some people that are like, oh, wow, this is the answer to all my problems. You know, I appreciated the learning part of school, but I don't like that traditional structure. So we're definitely getting people fresh out of high school, people that are homeschooled that aren't, you know, sort of were homeschooled because they needed a different approach to learning and teaching. That to people in you know, mid-career that are, again, like I said, bringing something back or looking to make a shift. We also have some people that have fully developed careers and are just looking to stay relevant, learn something new, keep their minds fresh.
Now, is this a rolling 90-day program, or is this like kind of you mentioned immersive, so I'm assuming you go somewhere for 90 days, or you do this out of your house?
Yeah. I've got chairs set up in my backyard. Yeah. No, so we are located in Atlanta at Atlanta Technology Village in Buckhead.
Right. I didn't mean out of your house. Like, I do it out of my house online, because there's coding things that I can do online, right?
Right. Yep. And we highly encourage people to use those for practice. But we believe that sort of from the beginning level, that it's incredibly important to have that human interaction and to sit alongside other people that are going through that struggle. So we have all of our classes at Atlanta Tech Village here in Atlanta. We have our first class starting on Monday.
Oh.
Which is very exciting.
Yeah.
So they are physically present.
Is it 5 days a week? Is it every other day?
It's 5 days a week, 9 to 5. We have a structure where in the morning you have sort of lecture time where you learn the topic of the day, you practice in your group.
And there's coffee there, so that's always
really good.
There
coffee,
is.
Right?
That's a good place
to
put
that.
They
still have the good coffee.
They have
there.
Octane
we have
there.
Octane coffee on the drip, yeah, constantly. Our new Octane coffee is actually opening a full location in the building in a few weeks.
Oh,
so
really?
We're very excited, yes.
That is very cool. All right, so, but these folks, after they emerge from this program, we're talking about a very employable person. Right. These folks are probably going to get work, right?
Yep. We are almost done. I think they have one more week on our class that's currently going through the Greenville campus. They're front-end developers. And as of a few weeks ago, 10 of 16 of those students already had jobs.
Well, and they'll go to work for people like Chris and like Lee and like the band of coders folks. And I'll tell you, you were talking earlier about how important it is that they are able to communicate and how people-centric you and your curriculum.
Right.
I mean, it absolutely knocked our socks off when we went through this, what did they call it, the inception phase of our project with the band of coders. That's because one of the things I was not looking forward to, quite candidly, was we were going to be on the phone for like 2 hours, hour and a half, 2 hours in this meeting, with a coder, okay? And I had this preconceived notion. I'm sorry.
Yep, you had the stereotype in your head.
But this guy did exactly what you were talking about, and he spoke in our language and helped. And that's what you're helping these.
Right. Yeah.
These students
do. I don't think it's uncommon for people to have that idea of somebody in like a dark room hunched over a computer.
Right.
I have it in my head now. That's kind of what we're trying to break. Yeah. It's just. It's unsuccessful, I think, for a lot of people to function that way. It's unrealistic to think that you're going to go into a work environment like that, even if you're coming in as a contractor. You still have to interact with other people and hopefully interact with the user to build a quality product. So, yeah.
That is fantastic.
I think it's a pretty big deal.
So what do you need more students? You need more prospective clients? What where do you need the help?
We welcome everybody. like I said, a lot of what we're trying to do is become very deeply ingrained in Atlanta's developer community. That is people looking to hire or people just looking to mentor. Be amazing. Okay. We really want to support our students because it is an incredible struggle for those 3 months. So, you know, we're inviting people in from the community to talk to them, to guide them, to mentor them.
Well, I was
them.
Just thinking, I mean, I don't want to... overstep my bounds, but how cool would it be to have a chief experience officer come in one afternoon and talk to your students?
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah, Lee, come? You're completely. Well, I would love that.
And can I do some recruiting while I'm there?
Of course,
and you can
of
do
course,
some recruiting. Yeah. Everybody wins.
Yeah, our process of finding our graduates' jobs is very personal. We get to know them literally weekly check-ins with each person individually to try to find them that perfect job that will support them. As a developer, everybody's different. Just like the learning process, the development process is very unique to each person. So we're always trying to find new people to partner with so we can find everybody their perfect position. That'd be great.
So now you started in Greenville. You're here in Atlanta. Or mm-hmm. Are you obviously just starting here in Atlanta? Are there plans to go beyond? I mean, you mentioned that this is an area where we're just desperate for
right.
people to have these skills.
Yeah. So the purpose of even starting in Greenville was that it was an area that was sort of looked over with technology.
Right.
And it's been wildly successful there, which is awesome. So Atlanta was a very natural move for us. Atlanta
right,
is a hotbed
the road,
for
right?
hotbed for technology people on both ends of it. But we're actually experiencing major expansion this year. So we're launching campuses in Charleston, Houston, Austin, Durham, Spartanburg. Did I say Tampa?
No.
Tampa?
Not yet. You did now.
So now how did you roll it out to all those markets? It seems almost simultaneously.
Yeah, pretty much. The partners in the Iron Yard are incredibly connected. Some of it happened because they knew people in those areas that needed the help. We're trying to stay in the Southeast for now. Again, an overlooked area. Everybody thinks of Silicon Valley.
Right.
Even on the East Coast, New York. But Atlanta and all the surrounding areas are incredibly in need of this sort of thing. And we're all Southerners, so.
Well, let's follow them around and put a studio in every market they open an Iron
yep.
Yard.
Yep.
That'd be
are
cool.
You,
are you in incubators? Is that where you tend to be, or accelerators?
Yep. They started in Greenville with the accelerator program. We have 3 accelerators, one in health tech, one in green tech, and one in open tech. So open tech is, you know, anything from entertainment, music, whatever it might be. So that's how they started. And from the accelerators, the academy grew very organically because we were supporting these portfolio companies, funding them, providing them mentorship. And then they didn't have enough developers to hire.
So you had to grow your own.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So it's like, well, if we can grow the companies, we can grow the developers too. So it's actually a really nice transition because those that join the Iron Yard Academy have an incredible network of companies that are also part of the family. So it's really
nice.
And
so you've developed this curriculum that gets people up to speed and employable in 90 days.
Yeah. Our instructors are very active in the industry. They are not necessarily career instructors.
Right. These may not be a professor of computer science.
Right,
this is somebody who's actually done the work and
exactly.
are just kind of educating and training the person in real world experience,
yeah.
You're not opening textbooks and lecturing on a chalkboard, right?
Right. We have 3 months off time for our instructors throughout the year because we have three-month sessions throughout the year. So that's 9 months of actual instruction time. All of our instructors are full salaried positions, but they get those 3 months off so that they can become
do their own thing, right?
Exactly, and stay relevant to their cohort. So it's a pretty great model. We're very happy with it.
And then at the end, the person, do they get some certificate of completion, or like this isn't an accredited college or anything like that, right?
No, we're working on getting certified as an academic institution currently. But nope, you don't get a certificate.
You just get skills that can get you jobs.
You get incredible skills, and you have a really great
portfolio when you're done to show somebody.
Yep. The wonderful thing about technology and working as a developer is that it is one of the few remaining meritocracies. Your portfolio speaks wonders to what you're capable of. Especially because it is changing so quickly. I have tons of friends that are developers that their resumes have 20 things from the last 2 years, and it's not because they keep jumping around, but it's just the nature of contract work, and it changes. Yeah. So I think it's an incredible incentive for people to work really hard to build up that portfolio, and we highly encourage them to continue learning. You're not going to learn everything you're ever going to know in those 3 months, obviously. But we're building a really solid groundwork for them to continue in that.
Now, is there going to be an opportunity to have an advanced degree? Like, this is a 90-day program. Maybe this is coding 101, but is there going to be a 201, 301 where you learn different languages or different skills?
I think that happens very creatively with the individual.
So then once a person has this base skill, then they're kind of on their own.
They're
just natural lifelong learners, so they'll just pick up new things.
That's the idea. We want to send them out so that they will continue learning on their own. The point of what we're doing is to break away from that traditional structure of where you have to continue on this set path in order to be successful.
So you're giving them the foundational skills to move forward on their own.
Exactly. Yeah. And they are. And it happens very quickly. It's very exciting.
And then you said your typical student is not necessarily somebody right out of college or right out of high school. It could be anybody midlife. It could be, and they could be, earlier, right? Could they be 10, 12 years old, a homeschooler or something like that? Or is there a minimum age?
I don't know that we've actually run into that
as a
question. They are adults. And we do, however, offer kids classes that are free. We encourage our students to volunteer. That's part of the whole giving community that we're trying to create.
And learning by teaching.
Exactly. That's a true sign of full retention, right? If you can teach someone else how to do it.
So how does that work? Is there right now, or this is the first class, so they're not?
We're gearing those up in the next couple of months. We're super excited. We're teaching kids Scratch. They've already been doing it in Greenville, which is sort of an interactive program for kids to, sort of plug and play, see that relationship between if I put this in, it will create this. And we're also teaching them some basic styling languages, HTML, CSS, to build websites. I think we're planning some Arduino classes. So it's free just to give kids that, that
kid
introduction.
Being high school, middle school?
More late elementary school, early middle school age. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Sort of
and
that
then
7
you,
to 12.
Is there any initiatives for girls and women?
Yeah. We love women. I'm a woman. That's something that I'm really passionate about. That's something that Iron Yard in general is very passionate about. We have a lot of women on staff.
Right. But there's not, from a percentage standpoint, there's many more men developers.
Absolutely. Yes, very
so
much so.
I didn't know if there was anything that you guys were doing we work with WIT, Women in Technology, and that's one of their ongoing.
Yeah. So reaching out to the community, we want, to be very open to that. We also offer scholarships specific to women that are based not even completely need-based. It's more about knowing that somebody is going to give back to that community and support women because that's incredibly important to us. We do have a lower percentage of women in our courses because we simply don't get as many women applying. However, in our current Greenville cohort, I believe that there are 4 women in it, which is pretty great even compared to the actual percentage of women in technology in general. We have, I think, 6 women and signed up for our 2 classes that are starting next Monday. So it is becoming more and more apparent to women that this is something that they can certainly right. do, and we're trying to support that as much as we can.
So if somebody went to learn more, website?
TheIronYard.com.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being part of the show today.
Thank you.
This is Lee Cantor for Stone Peyton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Technology Leaders.
Atlanta Technology Leaders is brought to you by Band of Coders. Band of Coders is a company of talented software developers who energize clients' projects and their development teams.